Hi, this is Tig. I talked to Andrew Yang for this episode a few weeks ago. Later that same day, something terrible happened. 8 people, including 6 Asian women, were shot and killed in Atlanta. Andrew tweeted after it happened, saying, quote, "This is terrible. My heart goes out to the victims of the Atlanta shootings and their families. They never harmed a soul." He also said, quote, "Racism is dehumanizing. I couldn't agree more. Thank you for spending your time with us." And here's my conversation with Andrew. There's other Tigs out there in the world. I can't pretend like I'm the only one.
Fascinating. You are the only Tig I think of. Frankly, there are a lot of people with a surname Yang, and I've actually met a half a dozen Andrew Yangs.
Like, well, really?
What? Oh, yeah. I was like, well, you're running for president. Someone would be like, I'm Andrew Yang, too. And then they'd bust out their driver's license. I'd be like, that's great. And then we'd take a picture together. I mean, I don't know if people know this, but yeah, like that, there are a lot of us.
This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro, and I don't have all the answers. I might not even have any answers. Today, we're so pleased to welcome to the show entrepreneur, author, former 2020 candidate for U.S. president, and current New York City mayor hopeful, Andrew Yang. Andrew, welcome.
Tig, thank you for having me. I'm such a huge fan and admirer of yours, and I can give flawed advice with the best of them. Maybe there'll be some good advice in there too.
Well, that's every show for me. I stumble upon what ends up being a surprise good piece of advice, and then I stumble upon a surprisingly, and actually maybe not so surprisingly, bad piece of advice, but it's all earnest and a lot of times nonsensical.
I like the format, Tig, because there have been so many times when you get asked a question and you answer it and you say something you didn't even know you thought. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But you only say it because someone put you on the spot.
Yeah, well, that's what every piece of advice is me put on the spot and my guests. So thanks for being a part of that. So, yeah, like I mentioned, you're running for mayor of New York and you ran for president last year. Is your measure for success in a campaign actually getting elected, or is it possible to have a successful campaign that doesn't end with winning?
I think it depends on the campaign. So for me, my presidential campaign, anytime someone, let's call them a journalist, asked me like, hey, do you really think you can win? Then you have to say, of course I think I can win. Because if you ever say like, no, not really, then they'd be like, aha, then the rest of it. But I think early on, someone interviewed me and I was like, well, there are different versions of victory.
Yeah.
And so for me in the presidential, it was, can I accelerate the end of poverty? Can I mainstream universal basic income and other ways to humanize the economy? Can I bring to light the fact that our economy is transforming because of technology and other forces? So I felt it was incredibly successful, despite the fact that I'm obviously not the president.
You did really well, though. It's really exciting to watch.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. I will say for the mayoral campaign, I will be very, very displeased if I do not win, in the sense that this is not like a Pyrrhic victory, spiritual victory type of race. This is the plan is to try and do as much good as I can for the greatest city in the world. And I want this job not because I think it's going to be an easy job. I think it's going to be a very challenging job, but I think I can do a better job than others could of getting our city back on its feet. So I'm running to win.
Well, I'm excited for you. I think a lot of people definitely feel like there's a lot of work to be done in the city. And I have faith in you, Andrew.
Well, thank you, Tig. I love this city dearly. I showed up as a 21-year-old student and have had the kind of career that 21-year-old version of me could never have even dreamt of. Like, it wasn't even like, oh, I accomplished my dreams. It's like, I would never even have known to dream.
That's how I feel about my career. I'm always, when people say, oh, did your dreams come true? I'm like, beyond. There was no part of me dreaming that this would be the life that I would have.
And at least for me, New York City made it all possible. So I'm really going to do everything I can to make it so that the city does the same thing for my kids and other people's kids.
Mm-hmm. That's great. In our respective professional worlds of stand-up and politics, Andrew, we both know how clear communication is an absolute non-negotiable. You are truly gifted at getting really complicated ideas across to people. What is your secret?
I think the way that I translate ideas myself is into relatively simple, straightforward terms. And then when I communicate it to someone else, it's just how I grew to understand it myself.
Yeah.
For someone to understand you, I think you have to try and translate it into experiences that they can relate to. And that's something that I try to do. And I hope I succeed at least some of the time.
Well, you did it perfectly in that description.
Oh, well, thank you, Tig.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I will unpack this a little bit. I was a very nerdy, bookwormy kid growing up in upstate New York. And then I tried desperately to fit in when I got a little bit older. And so I think that there were a couple of different ways of communicating and expressing oneself that I developed when I was young. In the 70s and 80s in that town in upstate New York.
Nice. What town is it?
Well, I was born in a town called Schenectady, which is upstate close to Albany. And then I grew up in a town called Somers, which is a little bit more than an hour north of New York City.
Oh, okay.
So the second one is not upstate. It's like I kind of smushed them together because I was born truly upstate.
I mean, Buffalo is considered upstate, right?
Yes, but Buffalo is way off to the west. Like, I actually think if you think upstate New York, you're thinking of something along the Albany, Schenectady area. And then when you go west, you wind up in Rochester and Buffalo.
Well, yeah, I've always been confused by it because my wife spent part of her childhood in Buffalo. And to me, you know, looking at a map, I'm like, well, that seems upstate. But I perform there pretty regularly, and I'm curious actually what you think of Buffalo.
Buffalo is maybe the most awesome place that I have yet to visit, which is something that I'm self-conscious about because I've been to a lot of places.
But you haven't been to Buffalo?
And I'm sorry, Buffalo, because there's so many people I know who love you, who love the Bills. I have a soft spot for the Bills Mafia, but I have yet to go myself.
Wow. I go there every year and tell jokes and I love it. And my wife hasn't been back since she was a kid. And she has this other idea of what the city is compared to what it is now and how much it's really begun to come back and become this hip area. And people are surprised to hear it, but it's a cool city.
You have to bring her next time you go there, Tig. You have to be like, come on with me. And then, you know,
I try. But somebody has to stay home with our two cubs. But yeah, I was just curious what you thought of it being a New York guy. Speaking of New York guys, there's another Andrew in New York politics who's been in the news lately. And do you care to comment on that situation?
I think that he should step aside and let Lieutenant Governor Hochul take over, at least while he's trying to deal with the various allegations against him, because it's a hard time for New York State. It's going to be, frankly, impossible for someone to govern under the circumstances that he's facing.
Yeah.
And you need someone who's laser focused on the issues of the day. And if it's not going to be him, it should be the lieutenant governor, who by all accounts, a lot of people think very well of. And it would be delightful to have the first woman governor in New York State's history, albeit under circumstances that no one would have wished.
Right. Yeah. It does feel like it's a little too messy for him to be hanging out in that position for much longer. Do you think it's likely that he'll step aside?
My read on it is that he does not seem like the type to step aside.
Yeah.
But you never know with individuals. I mean, they can wake up one day
and
make a decision that might be different than the one they'd made the day before.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for the insight. We're going to move on to our questions that people definitely will need your insight for. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, sure thing, Tig.
All right. This is the first question coming from Mom of a Free Baller. As a mom of two little boys, I need some advice. My five-year-old refuses to wear any type of underwear. We've tried boxers, boxer briefs, Calvin Klein, Under Armour, you name it, we've bought it. What the heck can I do to make this boy wear some undies?
Wow. So first, Tig, let me just ask. You said you had cubs at home. Like, yeah. How old are they? Are they comparable in age to the free baller mom?
Yeah, they're 4.5, and we've kind of run into this, especially in the pandemic. Things have gotten a little casual. But I happen to be right in the middle of this situation, and my sons have become beyond obsessed with baseball. They play all day long. They draw the
baseball diamond? The baseball field?
No, the logos.
Oh, the logos. That's fun.
Of each team. They're just truly obsessed. So I went and got them some underwear with baseball players on the underwear.
And that worked? This is some great advice, Tig.
I need you to understand I'm not exaggerating. I'm in the process of washing their new underwear today. In fact, I asked Stephanie to put it in the dryer for when I was doing my show. So they're getting their new underwear tonight to wear to bed. So that's the advice I can give, is find their interest and get the interest on the underwear. What do you say, Andrew?
The first word that came to mind for me, Tig, was bribery. Mm-hmm. What can I give you that will have you wear these tidy whities for the day? And in my case, because I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old, and the 5-year-old is very, very pliable with chocolate. So if I'm trying to get him to do something and it's not working, I will just be like, I'll give you a chocolate if you do this. And then he'll become very, very interested. So at least for me, I would say, if you wear these tidy whities, at the end of the day, you get a chocolate, at the beginning of the day, you get a chocolate. It would cost me approximately 2 chocolates to change his habits, I believe. I don't know if that's good parenting. I don't know if that would work on her children. But that is the word that came to my mind, was bribery.
And how big of a piece of chocolate are we talking about, Andrew? Are we talking like a little square?
Yes. So there's something called the Trader Joe's Advent calendar that has little pieces of chocolate behind little doors.
Yes.
And so we let him open a door and then grab a chocolate. And if he does that at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, then we can get him to do all sorts of stuff.
I don't even know what the brand is, but some sort of dark chocolate that we keep in our freezer. And when there's a special moment, we haven't used it to bribe, I don't think, yet, but we're not opposed to doing anything that it takes to make stuff happen at our house.
I have no idea if what I just said was bad parenting advice for some psychological reason I'm unaware of, but that was what came to my mind.
If it means getting underwear on a kid, how bad could it be, right?
Well, you hope that the underwear is just a habit, and then maybe the chocolate can graduate to something else.
Yeah.
I have no idea if this advice is excellent or not.
We're not looking for excellent advice. We're just looking for advice. And also, we can always point back to the title of the show, Don't Ask Tig, okay? That gets us out of everything, Andrew. So, mom of a free baller, we hope your 5-year-old will see the error of his ways. Write back and let us know how that works. Okay, we'll be back with more questions after the break. And we're back. Andrew, as some of our listeners may know, you have a son with autism. So you might have some firsthand experience. It's helpful to our next listener. This question comes from Chris. Chris writes, I am autistic and very much introverted, which is why I often find myself easily exhausted by engaging in conversations or by any human contact, really. It happens to me quite frequently that I'm slightly annoyed by interactions that my partner, who I'm living with, initiates. How do I tell her I need much more space for myself and my thoughts than an average person without it sounding too harsh. Do you have any initial thoughts or feelings based on experience?
I do. And it's based both on being the father of an autistic child who tends to not be very social, but also as someone who, again, grew up myself very introverted and bookish, who wound up doing the most extroverted thing one can imagine, which is run for political office.
Oh, my gosh.
And so what happened with me was that my extroversion circuits would get completely blown out in any given day or week, and then I would come home and I'd be a zombie. And so my wife, being a rock star supportive, actually understood that, okay, like I wasn't going to be in position to entertain, to socialize, to be someone who is going to hold up my end of a fairly normal standard conversation, you know, yeah, all the time I was back. So this is something I can relate to. I can relate to this questioner. The issue is how to communicate it to your partner in a way that would help them. And I'm going to suggest a book that I think might really, really help either her or both of you. It's called Quiet by Susan Cain. It's about how introverts get depleted by certain types of social interactions. And it was a book that helped us understand our child better. And then it also, in my case, helped me understand myself better. And I think that my wife's ability to accommodate my needs during the presidential campaign were actually born of the fact that she read this book. So Quiet, Susan Cain, it's an incredible book. And it's given rise to an entire movement around people who are introverted and require a degree of alone time in order to recharge.
That's really helpful. And whenever I see footage of presidents or candidates running for office and just constantly greeting and talking to people and shaking hands and taking pictures, I mean, how do you bounce back from that or even make it through that? I would be out day one.
For me, Tig, it is uplifting and still surprising. It's funny. I haven't been a public figure for that long, but if I go out as I went out this morning to Queens, when people see me, they're generally really excited to see me.
Yeah.
Which is very touching. And so I'm touched by it. And so it lifts my spirits and makes me happier. So that's one aspect of it, is that I don't feel it to be really any kind of drain or chore because folks are positive. And so, like, I reflect their positivity. But on the flip side, when I'm on my own, like, I often do completely end up unplugging or being alone with my thoughts, exercising, trying to do some kind of meditation or self-care and mindfulness. And if I don't do that over an extended period of time, I do kind of fritz a bit. So it's something that requires a degree of maintenance. And I'm happy to say both my family and my team kind of understand this about me.
That's great advice to recharge in those ways before you get back out there, because there's plenty of people that don't enjoy my comedy, but for those that do, they're very positive and happy to see me. But sometimes in ways I haven't had time to recharge, if I'm traveling or in between shows or gigs, and it's just tricky.
I'm sure everyone's thrilled to see you, Tig.
I just know I'm not for everyone, but it's good for me to remember to recharge when I can, whether it's on a walk or just hanging out and staring at the grass grow.
You know, the single best source of replenishment is nature. And that's not just me. That's science. Like if you are exposed to sun, grass, animals, like all of that stuff is very rejuvenating.
1,000,000%. Yes. But thank you for that book recommendation. I'm sure Chris is going to be thrilled to have this if they don't already. And Chris, asking for what you need is never easy, but it's always worth it. All right. Our next question comes from Austin.
So for a couple of years now, about every other day, I've been going to the same coffee shop and I love them. They're great people. They have great coffee. And especially this one barista, every time I go in, just gets really excited. It's like, hey, Andrew, how have you been, man? And we get to talking, and it's just like the perfect way to start the day. Just like someone really excited to see you. The problem is that my name's not Andrew, it's Austin. Now it's been a few years. It's pretty clear that that's just what he thinks my name is. And I don't know how to broach the subject, or if I should broach the subject, if I should say like, hey, that's not my name. I feel like it might be embarrassing at this point for him and me. I would love any insight.
All right. I have feelings about this. I feel like, first of all, this is hilarious. Second of all, I think that as embarrassing as you think it may be, everybody will live through it. It's not the worst moment of embarrassment that you or this wonderful barista will ever experience in your life. And so I think, like comedy and so many things in life, it's all in the delivery. And so since this person seems to be such an open, friendly guy, then maybe just approach the counter when there's not a lot of people, or wait till there's nobody there and just lean over and say, I just want to tell you how great you make me feel whenever I come in to your shop. It really makes my day. And I just want to tell you an interesting little bit of information about myself. And it's that my name is actually Austin. I experienced this once with somebody that was hired to do work at my house, and I was yelling the wrong name. I'd be like, hey, how's it going? Say the wrong name. Hey, do you want some water? Wrong name. And then I think a year in, he finally just said, my name is not Fernando. And I had a good laugh and a very true apology. But he didn't care. Andrew, what's your feeling?
I agree that as long as you lead with the look, you make my day. I'm so happy to see you all the time. You're one of the reasons why this has become such a big part of my routine in my life. I just want to let you know that my name is Austin. You probably just saw it written down like on some scrawl and you said it. I should have corrected you earlier. I just started to feel self-conscious, but just wanted to let you know how grateful I am for the work you do every day and what you mean. I think that is the best way, and no sane person would think anything of it after that, especially if you were to be so warm about it. Your other option is just to be Andrew forever.
Or have a friend come in with you and call you Austin in front of the barista and then hope the barista... But you know what? He's probably not even really going to notice, possibly.
That did occur to me, too, is that like, you have some people be like, hey, Austin, this place really is great, Austin.
Exactly.
But there's no way to do that without seeming really obvious and heavy-handed, in my opinion.
Ooh, I have another idea. If you know his name, maybe you could call him something obviously not his name. If you said, hey, Benjamin Franklin, or hey, Bert, something that you feel confident is not his name.
Hey, Bert.
Hey, Maggie Lou, something you know for sure. And then he would look at you like you're insane. And then again, that is...
Yeah, no, this seems like it'd be like too harsh a correction in my view. And I just want to share something because I can relate to an aspect of this. I was a very shy, conscientious kid. And when I thought I'd screwed up in some social context, I would just berate myself afterwards for like days and days and be like, oh, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I did that. And being able to let that go became such a huge part of my being able to push myself into all sorts of situations. So while you feel embarrassed by the fact that you've been having these exchanges, you haven't corrected this person, I really think it's going to be liberating for you just to, as Tig's saying, just try and approach it in a lighthearted way. Because really no one's done anything wrong here.
And I bet it'll even make for a tighter connection with this person that brightens your day every morning, because you'll have that little funny blip in your relationship. But Austin, I'm not saying Andrew isn't a fine name, because let's be honest, it's pretty stellar, and I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
Guess, yeah, but you do deserve to be called by your actual name if you want it, but be called by your name. Andrew, this is our last question, and it comes from Sarah. Sarah writes, although this seems churlish, people around me seem to pick up and use a lot of my catchphrases and quips. And then I think or feel like I don't want to use the phrases again. This is in emails, texts, social media, etc. These phrases feel connected to my identity, so at times it stings a bit. Any advice?
Wow. I think that you should feel great about yourself that you're so witty and creative that people are actually using your catchphrases and witticisms. That's really stellar.
Yeah.
I think the main thing you have to do is just document first usage, like when you coined it, and just have a timestamp and be like, look, this is, a Tigism or an Andrewism or whatever it is. And then when the people around you start using it, you'd be like, I'm so glad you're using this term I came up with X weeks and months ago. Timestamp, ding. And then you can make a joke about them paying you royalties and the rest of it. So instead of feeling like it's being usurped from you, you could feel like everyone's cribbing off of you and paying homage to your wit and originality.
Yeah, timestamp it and also hashtag it. Just hashtag first time ever said, and please enjoy using this from here on out. Or hashtag first time ever said, don't ever use this. This is mine if you really want to be greedy about it. But here's what I do when people say things that I've said. I always say, I'm glad you're enjoying that. Make sure to give me credit.
Does this happen to you a lot in comedy, Tig? Because I confess it happens to me an awful lot in politics where like I'll say something and then X days or weeks later, some other candidate will parrot it. And I'll be like, cool if you're doing it. But if you might want to say, like, as my colleague Andrew said.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is I always try and keep it lighthearted. Or a lot of times they'll even say, ooh, I'm going to start using that. And then I immediately say, give me credit.
Well, I feel like for comedians, there are like very, very strict rules around this stuff, right? I mean, heck, like if you have a joke that you like, it has to be yours and no one else can use it. Or isn't that some kind of crazy violation?
It's for sure a violation. But there is a tricky element to being a comedian in that you're making a lot of observations that... Sadly, you're not the only one to make the observation a lot of times. And that's not to say that people aren't stealing material. But I know for myself, I've told jokes on stage where when I got off, somebody has said, hey, you know, George Carlin said something similar to that. Or there's this local comedian that has something like that. And immediately I'll drop it. But that's really usually observational comedy. Whereas if you come from a really personal place, nobody can steal that. Nobody's going to have the same experience.
That's true. No one's been through what you've been through, and you in particular, Tig.
Yeah, I mean, all of us, everyone alive. If what you're delivering and sharing is from the most personal place, it's the most personal story. And that's not to say it has to be personal in the way that I did it in comedy of sharing about my mother's death or my illnesses and cancer and everything like that. That's very personal. But if it's just personal in your experience, it's less likely that somebody's going to be able to take the story and run. Andrew, before we head out of Sarah's question here, do you have a catchphrase that people steal or that you don't want people to steal?
Well, heck, I mean, the thing I'm best known for is universal basic income, which now a majority of Americans are for, in part because we're living a version of it. I mean, I think we're in our third stimulus check.
Yeah.
And shocker, people like getting these checks. That it makes people healthier, more positive, more optimistic, more trusting, more mentally healthy. It even improves mm-hmm. relationships. And everything I've just said is documented by many studies.
And I think a lot of the fear is that it would you know, make people not want to actually go back to work. And I think the studies have shown that that's not the
happening
case
at all. Yeah, there are actually other stories that have been documented where someone had a part-time job and they got a bit of cash, and the cash enabled them to apply for a full-time job that ended up paying them more and improves their situation. So hopefully we can do things like that here in the city of New York. This city is hurting right now. It's badly wounded. But I think that we can be smarter and more human about the solutions we're implementing and try and get people back on their feet.
I think that you're going to do a tremendous job. I'm so, so excited to see all this unfold.
Well, thank you, Tig. I've got a vision. New York City is back and open for business, and you come with your wife and your boys, and you have a big show, and you're part of our great reopening. What do you think?
I'm all in. Sarah, here's hoping you get some credit for your catchphrases. All right, Andrew, that's it for listener questions, but I have one last thing to ask you before you go. What is the best advice anyone has ever shared with you?
Early in my career, someone said to me, try and find the person in your organization whose life that you want for yourself, not just career, but life. And then follow that person, because if you're around that person, you will end up learning from them in ways both professional and personal. And then the corollary to that was, if there is no one in your organization whose life you want, then you need to try and find another organization or a job or opportunity. You don't need to do it today, but you should try and do it eventually. And that advice really stuck with me, where I, at the time, was an unhappy attorney here in New York City. And I looked around and there were many admirable people in that firm, but I did not aspire to the paths that they had taken successfully. And so I ended up leaving, starting a business that did not work out, but it led me down a completely different path. And I never looked back. So I'm grateful to that person for that advice to say, try and find a person whose life that you want and then follow them.
That's so cool. I love that. It makes me want to really sit back and think, who is the person? Because I know there's bits and pieces from different people that I've looked to or tried to emulate, but I'm wondering if there's kind of an all-encompassing person. And is that kind of what it takes, or do you just take bits and pieces from wherever you can get it?
I think in your field, it's certainly bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. And for me too, as I got more experienced, I think it also is taking from different folks that you encounter and are uplifted by, or you know that they're excellent in a way that you want to be. But I think given what you do, it ends up being a constellation.
Yeah.
Because I have a sense of the creative process that you undergo, and you're around so many other really talented people. It's one reason why I really enjoy the kind of camaraderie that so many comedians share, is that you all, you know, it's not like you like take stuff from each other, but you all kind of bounce things off of each other and end up fueling each other creatively.
Yeah, I really honestly hadn't fully thought how similar comedy and politics were until I was sitting here talking to you today.
Tig, I'm not kidding. Imagine showing up to that small bar or event in New Hampshire and Iowa, and then just people are there and they give you half an hour, 45 minutes of their time, and your goal is to try and touch them and reach them and inspire them and move them in some way, and then you just keep doing it day after day, and you hope that the groups get a little bit bigger. And that someone, you know, decides to tell their friends, and the similarities are uncanny in some ways.
Wow. Yeah, it's fascinating. I truly had never thought of it. Well, Andrew, thank you again so much for joining me today. And is there anything that you would like to promote before you go?
I just want to promote the greatest city in the world, New York City. We're going to be back on our feet before many people think is possible. If you want to keep up with me and the campaign, you can go to yangforny.com or just andrewyang.com. And if you had visiting New York on your mind, come on by. It's great. The people are awesome. The food's the best in the world. We would love to see you.
That's great. I'm all for you, Andrew.
Thanks, Tig. I'm going to do my best to have a positive impact. I'll see you all soon.
One more thing. I have a very special request for my listeners. Do you have a secret that you need my advice to deal with? What's the secret you have never verbalized to anyone, maybe not even to yourself? I want to hear it. Call 833-275-8444. 833-ASK-TIG-4. And leave me an anonymous voicemail and I might play it on the show. Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette and Shayna Deloria. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher. Executive producer, Lauren D. Engineering and sound mixing by Johnny Vince Evans. Digital production by Christina Lopez. Talent booking by Marianne Ways. Production support from Pizza Shark. Our theme music is Friend in Tig by Edie Burkell and Kyle Cresham. And Listen to Your Heart by Edie Burkell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Concept developed by Tracy Mumford. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. You can always ask for advice at don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo. You can also follow us on social media at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thanks, Dana. And I'll tell Becky.